Good afternoon, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And I don't know if you ever took economics in college or in high school or wherever, but there's a macroeconomics and a microeconomics, at least when I took it. So you're probably wondering why I'm bringing that up. Well, William did the micro version of today's sermon, and I'm going to do the macro version. So we have a similar subject, but a little different. So I just want to let you know that up front, a little different, but similar focus on Thanksgiving. Yesterday was Black Friday. I think everybody's familiar with that term. The one day of the year that retail shops hope to go from being in the red into the black. Can you imagine working almost 11 months and being in the red and putting all your hopes that you can begin to have a profit on one day, the day after Thanksgiving? And that's why they call it, you go from the red to the black. They call it Black Friday. And because it's so important to the profitability of retail shops, millions and millions of dollars go into preparing for this day and preparing consumers to spend. Consulting firm Accenture predicts that about 52% of American consumers would hit stores on Black Friday, which was yesterday, as compared to just 42% last year. By Sunday or tomorrow, around 134 million people would have perhaps gone shopping, and that's expected to be up 5% as compared to last year. So special deals, special pricing causes many to line up early in the mornings to race to their desired purchase. Maybe it's an iPod, large screen TV, laptop, camera, or some other purchase that's heavily discounted to get you in the shop. Retailers feed our desire and stir us up to believe we need something and encourages us to spend, oftentimes on things we don't really need or can't afford. I had a Facebook friend, or someone on Facebook that I'm friends with, had a comment, for those who are familiar with Facebook, and they actually wrote, "Am I stupid for waiting in line at Radio Shack at 5:30 in the morning?" And this is their second stop, by the way. And so they must have been there with their iPod. Maybe they just bought it, and they're already online writing what they're doing. So I didn't make a comment because maybe they were getting a deal of a lifetime on something he needed, and he'd saved up the money to buy it. So maybe it was a good situation for him. So I didn't comment. But there are some who camp out the day before just to get the deal on a laptop or TV. I've seen people who camp out on either right before Thanksgiving meal or afterwards, and they're in their little tent, and they're out there in line waiting to be one of the first in line to capture the deal. This frenzy to get a deal is really tapping into the desire in humans to want something we don't have, and that somehow having something will make us happy or content. The advertiser's best approach is to tap into the idea that someone else had something cool or great, and you have to have it to be happy in life or content in life. How many advertisers will do this is they often will show some scene like a father giving his son a new toy, and it implies that they will have hours and hours of blissful fun together as a result of this new toy purchase. God actually warns us and even commands us not to fall into that trap. The Bible calls it covetousness, and the tenth commandment specifically addresses covetousness. If you want to, I'll read you Exodus 10:20. I think we know this. It's the tenth commandment. In Exodus 20:17, it says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's." Most of us know we should not covet, yet this may be one of the most difficult commandments to keep in today's society. You know, for example, society does not endorse murder, right? So we don't, necessarily murder. It doesn't reward that. Society does not encourage lying. It does not reward stealing. And as a whole, it doesn't really reward adultery. It's kind of still negative. People tend to still look at that as pretty negative. But in general, the same cannot be said about the 10th commandment. Those who have lots of worldly possessions are looked upon as successful, and often that's who we measure people by. Western society looks positively towards those who are driven to acquire and obtain material possessions. And society actually encourages us to get what we want. I actually just went onto Amazon.com and typed in on the book section, get what you want, just to find out what books might come up with the title, get what you want. And I actually found three that came right off the bat. One is called Get What You Deserve. Another one is The DNA of Success. Know what you want to get what you want. And this last one, How to Use What You've Got to Get What You Want. And there, we could keep going on and on. These are just books with this title in this. So these are just books with the title, Get What You Want. There's obviously many books that probably say it a little nicer and more milder than that, but the underlying theme is how to get what you want and how to be successful by getting what you want. There's even a website called covet.com with a byline called Shop Without Sin. Desiring something and getting it is looked upon as being successful. It really is in our society. There's shows that encourage us to want more than we have. When I was growing up, there was a popular show called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. And I remember watching this show, and they spent an hour showing you some very ultra-rich individual or family who had, you know, things that nobody in the average person would ever come close to obtaining, you know, mansions and yachts. And today we have a similar show called Cribs, which is on MTV, which is shows how rich rock stars and famous people that are younger live and their lifestyle and their houses or homes and mansions. And even there's a recent hit song that came out called I Want to Be a Rock Star, which kind of pokes fun at, yet at the same time glamorizes the rock star lifestyle, you know, and individuals that have all these things. And so it kind of shows society, again, looks up to this lifestyle. Unlike other sins, coveting is not one that society looks down on, as we've seen, and maybe even encourages. What then are the keys or principles we can follow so we don't begin to go down the path of covetousness? Today I'd like to talk about three keys, and I'll just tell you those because I like to know when I hear someone speak, I like to know where we're going. So one is being thankful, being content, and having our mind on things above. The first principle of not coveting is to be thankful and grateful. This past Thursday, as everybody knows, was Thanksgiving, a time to contemplate and be thankful for our blessings. Let me read from a cartoon from Peanuts about Snoopy and Thanksgiving. Snoopy, and it goes like this. Snoopy took one look at the dog food and said, "This isn't fair. Everybody else today is eating turkey with all the trimmings, and all I get is dog food because I'm a dog," he said. "All I get is dog food." He stood there and stared at his dog for a moment and said, "I guess it could be worse. I could be the turkey, or I could be a turkey." Maybe in the U.S. this year, many felt a little bit like Snoopy. They find themselves in a difficult situation or maybe worse off than they were last year. Just like Snoopy, the Snoopy illustration, we still have a lot of what we can be thankful for. Being thankful for our blessings and grateful for what we have starts to focus our mind on what we have been given and not what we don't have. Having a mindset of thankfulness and gratitude moves us in the direction away from covetousness. It actually has been proven that being thankful and having an attitude of gratitude can contribute greatly to our happiness and peace of mind. In a well-known study by psychologists Dr. Robert Edmonds and Michael McCullough, who conducted a research project of gratitude and thankfulness, several positive results came from those who were asked to keep a gratitude journal on a weekly basis. And they actually set up three control groups. The first group were asked to write down five things that they were grateful for that had happened to them in the last week for each of the 10 weeks of the study. And this was called the gratitude group or condition. And the second group were asked to write down five daily hassles from the previous week. This was the Hassles condition. The third group simply listed five events that occurred to them in the last week, but were told not to focus on either positive or negative. They could write down anything they wanted to. And this was the events or control condition. So the people, the types of things that people listed in the grateful condition group included sunsets through the clouds, you know, a chance to be alive, the generosity of friends, and it went on and on. And the group that was the hassle group, you know, they wrote down hassles, the things that were bothering them, the things they didn't like. They wrote down things like taxes, hard to find parking, burn my macaroni and cheese, and the list goes on and on. And I think you can relate to both groups, right? We can focus on all the things that are hassles and daily hassles, or we can focus in on the things that we're thankful for. An interesting thing came out of this. They realized some interesting impacts for those who kept what they called gratitude journals. And these were some of the results. Those who were grateful or in the group that was grateful or kept gratitude journals for 10 weeks, they found they exercised more regularly, reported fewer physical symptoms, felt better about their lives as a whole, and were more optimistic about the upcoming week compared to those who recorded hassles or were neutral life events. Those who kept gratitude journals had higher states of alertness, enthusiasm, determination, attentiveness, and energy. And those who kept gratitude journals were more likely to report having helped someone with personal problems or having offered emotional support to another person. This group also reported having greater amounts of high energy, positive moods, greater sense of feeling connected to others, more optimistic about their life, and had better sleep duration and sleep quality. And as a whole, they reported being 25% happier. So it would appear from this research that by being thankful and grateful, we can be happier and more productive in our lives. Being thankful may just mean taking a different perspective on our situation. One person wrote it down this way, and I'll read it to you. I am thankful for the taxes I pay because it means I'm employed. I am thankful for the clothes that fit a little too snug because it means I have enough to eat. I'm thankful for my shadow who watches me work because it means I am out in the sunshine. I'm thankful for the lawn that needs mowing, windows that need cleaning, and gutters that need fixing because it means I have a home. I'm thankful for the spot I find at the far end of the parking lot because it means I'm capable of walking. I'm thankful for my huge heating bill because it means I am warm. I'm thankful for all the complaining I hear about our government because it means we have freedom of speech. I am thankful for the lady behind me in church who sings off-key because it means that I can hear. I am thankful for the piles of laundry and ironing because it means my loved ones are nearby. I am thankful for the alarm that goes off in the early morning hours because it means that I'm alive. I'm thankful for the weariness and aching muscles at the end of the day because it means I have been productive. Sometimes this means taking a little different look at our situation to be thankful. If we take an approach similar to what we just read, it takes the focus away what we don't have, but we focus on the blessings we do have, which really can shift us our mind away from having a covetous outlook. It's not surprising that research has shown the benefits of being thankful and having gratitude, because the Bible says a lot about being thankful. The word thanksgiving occurs 31 times. And the phrase giving thanks to you, God, or thanks occurs 43 times. The words thank and God occur in the same verse 15 times, and thanks and God are used together 23 times. Thanks or thanks and Lord appear together 43 times. But just being thankful and having a gratitude is only the starting point. We should also acknowledge God as the source of our blessings. If you'd like to turn to Psalm 100, I want to thank William for covering this. I'll be a little more briefer in this section. But Psalm 100, as he said, is the psalm of thanksgiving. And it tells us that we should be giving thanks to the Lord. Being thankful for, you know, saying thanks for a family member or thanks you for the house, I guess is a nice start. But we really need to go further and really acknowledge where the source of the blessing comes from and be happy about that. Psalm 100, let's read in verse 1. Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us and not ourselves. I'm often becoming a little more annoyed every time I hear the phrase, he is a self-made man, a woman, or a self-made millionaire. And often you hear that phrase about people, and it's very, when you see someone like that, there's obviously a lot to admire about the individual. But it really makes it sound like this person did it themselves. They pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps and just on their own strength. And oftentimes there are people who have incredible stories. They overcame and they had success. But it's never done by ourselves. And this is, you know, a phrase you often hear, and it's never by ourselves. It's God actually made that individual, gave them the strength, the ability to perform, to think, to do whatever it was that made them successful in the end. No matter what the situation and how bad it was, they ultimately had a body and a mind and a personality that God gave them to be successful and to overcome. Going on, we are his people and his sheep and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful to him and bless his name. For the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generation. Again, a reminder, and as many of them in the Bible, that we're to be thankful to him. We can be thankful for a lot of things, but ultimately we need to go to the source of our blessings. This past Thursday, I wonder how many just counted their blessings and how many gave God the credit for those blessings. It is refreshing when someone is honored for an achievement that they thank those in their life who helped them along the way, such as parents, a teacher, a coach, a special mentor. It shows that they understand that there's others who contributed to their success. But occasionally, and it's rare, you'll hear someone who understands where the ultimate source of their blessings came from when they take time to acknowledge God for their blessings. We should always know the source of our blessings. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 8. There's a very familiar, it's not the same verse, but it's a similar verse that William read. In Deuteronomy 8. In verse 7, it says, for the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land. And again, we're talking about the Israelites. He wants them to know where their blessings came from. A land of brooks, of water, of fountains and springs that flows out of valleys and hills. A land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates. A land of olive oil and honey. A land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing. A land whose stones are iron, and out of those whose hills you can dig copper. And we definitely live in a land that this describes. We have immense resources. All the nations of Israel have immense resources. They have not just copper and iron, which is really signifying. They have things, they can they have minerals and things they can build and create industry with. But there's land that has that can produce wheat to make bread. And that, for the most part, has really described the lands of Israel. And when you have eaten, in verse 10, and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Again, where did it come from? Who gave it to us? Who gave the land to the Israelites? Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. So again, a reminder that we're always to thank God for what we have and the source of our blessings. We live in a country very blessed. I challenge anybody who thinks that they are a self-made individual to go to another country that isn't so well off and see how successful they are. Go to some parts of Africa or Asia or even Europe, and I don't think they'll have the same success that they may have had in one of the Western Israelite countries. lot of different situation. So just by being in this country, they should give honor and give God the thanks for whatever success they may have made in this country. Unfortunately, we see that our country is putting less value on God's commandments, so it should be no surprise that there is less awareness that God has provided us a rich and abundant country that allows us to live in a very blessed life. If you ever find yourself maybe in an attitude where you're wishing you had more, or you're wishing you had a different life with more things, and you start seeing yourself saying, well, if I had that, I'd be happy. If I had this, I'd be happy. Try this experiment. Because when we're doing that, we should hopefully recognize that we're falling into a covetousness mindset, and we're desiring and dreaming of these things, and we're starting to think that they'll bring us joy and happiness. Take a moment to reflect on all of our blessings, all your blessings that you do have. Count the blessings you've been given in your life, over not just now, but over your whole life. And then give God sincere and honest thanks for those blessings. If you do that, and if you have the same experience I have, you'll feel immediately different, and you'll change your outlook and feel much more at peace, and you won't be in the covetous attitude. You may have been drifting, and you'll be much more thankful and appreciative for what you do have. When we are grateful for our blessings and we are giving God the praise and thanks, we are less likely to slip into a covetous mindset. There once was a young man who was feeling very proud of himself, and as a brand new college graduate, he had taken the CPA exams and passed with flying colors. Now he was a full-fledged certified public accountant, and it is a lot of work to pass a CPA exam. His father had been an immigrant to the U.S. and now owned his own little business. Filled with self-importance, the young man began to criticize his father's way of keeping books. He said, "Dad, you don't even know how much profit you've made. Over there in the drawer are your accounts receivable. Over there are your receipts, and you keep all your money in the cash register. You don't have any idea how much money you've made." The father answered, "Son, when I came to this country, the only thing I owned was a pair of pants. Now your brother is a doctor, your sister is an art teacher, and you are a CPA. Your mother and I own a home, we have a car, and we own this little business. Now add that up, subtract the pants, and all the rest is profit." Maybe some of us can relate to this illustration. The father had a perspective on the situation that demonstrated a level of contentment with his life. The Bible puts it another way, but makes the same point. If you'd like to turn with me to 1 Timothy and verse 6. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6, it says, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content." Being thankful and grateful and acknowledging God for all our blessings leads us down the path of contentment. When we are content with our situation and how God is directing our lives, we are less likely to develop attitudes of covetousness. When we have contentment with godliness, as Paul phrased it in Timothy, we demonstrate faith and trust in God, that God is directing our lives the way it should be. Paul learned contentment, something we learn over time. He said he learned it. If you'd like to turn to Philippians 4, and we'll start in verse 10. This is what Paul said. It says, "But I rejoice," and this is verse 10 of Philippians 4, "but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly. And now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity." And he's writing to Philippians here. "Now that I speak in regard to need, For I have learned in whatever state I need to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So here we see that Paul learned contentment. He went through some difficult times. Paul had faith and conviction that God was directing his path, and wherever he was, in whatever state he was in, he was content. Paul may have abounded, but he also learned to be content in suffering. Let me just review some of the things Paul went through. He was in prison frequently. He says he was in five times. He received 40 stripes minus one. He was beaten three times with rods. He's stoned, shipwrecked three times, and goes on to say he's had sleepless nights, nights he was cold, and nights he was out without food. Yet he said he learned to be content in all those situations. Paul knew where his strength came from, even in very difficult situations. He did not faint or lose hope. He was content because he knew that his Lord and Savior was leading him. And though it was not always pleasant, he did not have to fear. Paul expressed these statements found in Hebrews 13:5. Let me read this to you. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, he will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? And that comes from Psalms 118 and verse 6. He quoted that. So Paul was able to be content with his situation. He could see that all the things that people were pursuing in the Roman Empire, they were pursuing extreme wealth, power and comfort, they were all temporal. They were all passing. Like Paul, we were called to a higher calling. And when we fully understand it and we fully believe it, we become much more content with our situation here. And when we focus on the qualities and values that are permanent fixture of the kingdom of God, we become content. Let's turn to Colossians 3. Colossians 3 and verse 1 says, if then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. When we're baptized, we have a new focus that we pursue. Our energy is primarily on seeking the things that are above, where Christ is, at the right hand of God, the permanent values and traits of the kingdom. And what do we cease to put energy into? Well, let's read on in verse 3. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Therefore, put to death your members which are on earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them. When our minds are properly on the things above, we cease to put energy into the worthless pursuits that we used to be interested in, including covetousness. We don't pursue the same things. We don't put energy into pursuing the same things. I was actually thinking about this. And why it's very difficult to be called out and in the church and be a highly, highly, at the very top of your successful person, whether in business or whatever area you want to pick, you know, maybe a CEO of a large company. And it's really, really difficult because the reality is people often say, well, they conflict. Well, you might, you know, say that, well, you can't be a CEO of a company or do this because they conflict. But in the end of the day, It just takes so much time to be at that level, at a CEO level, to operate, that you really can't pursue the things of God at any great measure. I mean, if you really want to operate that way, at that level in the world, you're putting pretty much 24 hours towards the things to be successful in a company. And that's why I think it's very difficult, or why you see very few people in the church who make it to that level. It doesn't mean it can't happen. It doesn't mean they can't do it. But it's very difficult because it takes so much time to really pursue the things that are above and put the time into doing those things and at any level. So what are the things that we seek from above? Therefore, as the elect of God in verse 12, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you are called in one body, and be thankful. The things that are of above, such as mercy, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, and patience with others, forgiveness, and love, these are the things which are things from above, the things of Jesus Christ, the things of God, and the things of the kingdom. When our mind is on those things, it's very hard for the desires and covetousness that's all around us to seep into our lives. When we break the tenth commandment and we covet, we show a lack of understanding in many areas. We don't understand that we have much to be thankful for. We don't understand and appreciate the source of our blessings. We don't understand and have appreciation for the situation that God has placed us, leading us to be discontent. We don't understand when we break the tenth commandment, we don't understand that the physical things in this world are passing and we are not putting importance on the things that are above. Let's go back to Philippians 4 in conclusion. Philippians 4. Looks like we get to end a little early today. Philippians 4. And we read a little bit from this section, but I want to read because it kind of captures all these things we just talked about being thankful, understanding the source of our blessings, and putting our minds on the things that are above, not earthly things. So Philippians 4 and verse 6. Be anxious for nothing. It means let's not worry about what we don't have or what we don't have or what we want. Be anxious for nothing. A lot of people spend a lot of time being anxious for things. It says here, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. He knows we need things. We live on this earth. We definitely need things to survive, and he certainly wants us to be blessed. But it says here, go to God with thanksgiving. Put your request to him. And when you do that, you can have, in verse 7, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. Again, when we have this attitude, we're going to God, we're praying, we're giving him in prayer, thanksgiving for, and asking, here, I do need this, God. And we're giving him, asking him for those things. The attitude, it says it will guard our hearts will be guarded. And it says the attitude, which means the attitude of covetousness will not enter into our lives. In verse 8, finally, brethren, whatever things are true. Again, these are the things that we need to put our mind towards, the things we think about, the things that we think on above, that come from above. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. These are things from above, things we put our mind towards. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you did not care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I have learned both to be full and be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can, and we can, do all things through Jesus who strengthens me.